Hello and welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's Emma Bunnell. And Emma, I have a confession.
What have you done, Charlotte?
What have I done? Right, it's April the 3rd, the afternoon of Thursday, the 3rd of April, and I, Emma, am wearing shorts. I know.
I equally have a confession.
Oh, God.
I wore sandals to the shops earlier.
Did you? I've only got the legs out at home. You've got the toes out in public.
Toes out in public. I'm even going for a pedicure later.
Blimey. Well, this is the kind of feisty insight you get on this show. These are the kind of people we are. We've gone for it. We've absolutely...
No holds barred here, baby.
None. Absolutely none. Look, as I say, we recorded this on Thursday, the 3rd of April, and there is basically only one story in town. It's the morning after, in Washington at least, the night before, in which Donald Trump has announced all sorts of tariffs on all sorts of, well, basically every country in the world.
Go on. Russia's not on the list.
Interesting. Yes, interesting. Listeners can draw their own conclusions from that, I would suggest. There are minimum, basically 10% tariffs on all exporters to the US, which is, Faisal Islam on the BBC has called it the biggest change to global trade in 100 years. The markets, there's a lot of red I'm seeing on whatever business website you go on to.
I think I read that the S&P, which is the American stock market, is down 3%.
Yeah, it's one of the American markets, which is huge. Interestingly, from what we're seeing, again, as we're recording this, because no doubt by the time you get to listen to this, all sorts of things will have changed. Let's put that caveat up front. But in the immediate aftermath, British markets and stuff seem to have done okay. Mm. And just to turn to the politics of it, the British government seems to be focused on getting a deal, not lashing out with tariffs yet. There'll be some reciprocal tariffs, but it's not quite the all-out war yet. If they can avoid it, I'm not sure you can avoid it, but let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think that they are in watchful waiting mode, I guess. Wait and see. Don't jump in immediately with responsive tariffs. But I guess if any kind of trade deal doesn't get over the line in the next few weeks, few months, at the outside, very outside, then there will have to be reciprocal tariffs.
Yeah. The line is basically considering reciprocal retaliatory tariffs, not haven't immediately responded in the way, some of the other countries are. Interestingly, Canada and Mexico seem to be, there's sort of special treatment for them as well going on, and that's been around, that's gone on for long before this quote-unquote Liberation Day. The US politics of it is sort of fascinating, because if I were a US president, and there are a multitude of reasons why I'm not, not least my passport.
I'm going to be a birther if you try and run for US president. You weren't born there.
I think there's no. I've done running for things. Anyway, no. But my point is, should anyone be the US president, the one thing you might not want to do is make cars more expensive for Americans. Americans really like cars. They don't like paying lots for them. And one of the immediate results of what Trump has done will be to make cars more expensive.
Yes, make cars a lot more expensive on the forecourt.
Correct.
So that will have an impact both on Americans buying cars, but also on your smaller dealerships in particular as well, who, exist on those margins.
It's a great point, actually. I hadn't thought of it. I'd only thought of it on the consumer side. But you're absolutely right, of course, because if people are not wanting to buy a new car because it's too expensive, the people that sell the new cars ain't doing that well either.
Yeah, and I think this is it, because most of those dealerships are, they're most likely either independent We Sell Any Make dealership,
mm-hmm.
or their franchises. Mm-hmm. So they are still, you know, it's like a sort of semi-ownership. It's like me leaseholding my flat, right?
Sure.
And I think a lot of the conversation is, oh, this will make Ford do X, Y, and Z, or this will make Mustang do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, there hasn't been that focus on that middle part of the market. Yeah. The other thing that, and I think we are culturally less aware of this in the UK,
mm-hmm.
Is that an awful lot of middle-earning Americans have money in stocks and shares, far more than we have here. The stock market really matters to middle-earning Americans. You know, here, our relationships to the stock market is usually at one remove. It matters because of our pension fund or whatever.
Yeah, to some extent.
But very few of us, like statistically, as a percentage of the UK's population, play the stock market.
Sure.
Because of the difference in terms of the way that American Social Security is, in the way that their relationship to taxes, in the way that their relationship to pensions are, an awful lot more ordinary Americans do play the stock market. And if they see that investment tanking, Trump, who was already saw quite precipitous drops in his approval ratings on the economy, will see those drop further.
I think that's all true. I think, what, you know, as I say, Americans don't like paying more for cars. They don't like paying more for petrol. And, you know, those things really do matter to quote unquote ordinary Americans, the type of people Trump thinks he appeals to as a starting point. And, you know, we've heard lots about, for example, the price of eggs in America, the price of food more broadly in America. If people go to the shops and things are still getting more expensive, which trade wars do that does tend to be the result of trade wars, let's be honest.
Yeah.
That's also going to have a negative effect, which leads me to the next question, which is, why on earth is Donald Trump doing this? And my conclusion, please tell me why I'm wrong, Emma, is that this is not a thought-out plan. He thinks this is all... Everything Trump does is transactional. Someone wins, someone loses, right? And therefore, he is thinking, I'm going to win this trade war. That is not how global politics works. It's not really how normal business works, but it maybe can be in sort of some aspects that he's been involved in. You know, you get the price of the building down, you sell it for more than you thought you could, whatever. It is not how global trade works. It just can't be in 2025. And for some reason, that is his approach to everything. Do you have a better explanation for what's going on?
I think there's an added element, which is that he is surrounded by a certain type of ideologue that is very nationalistic and just sees any kind of relationships with the outside world as zero sum. They're screwing us. We've got to screw them. Diplomacy is for wimps. And they are the ones who are going on television and saying there will be short-term pain. That's fine. We'll gain in the long term. Now, that may or may not be true. I think they may be slightly overestimating even if America comes through this as the quote-unquote winner.
Yeah.
You know, the cost of doing war and is not always as simplistic as winner takes it all, at all. And so America may come out of this as still the strongest economy in the world, but there will be an awful lot of knock-on effects that I don't think they've really thought through, because they are so simplistic in their might is right, America first thinking, that they almost like if you look at the way they talk about Europe, they've absolutely convinced themselves that Europeans are made up of money-grubbing, cheese-eating surrender monkeys who just want to leech on America, and that's they're driven by that desire to leech.
At least our cheese tastes proper, not like the plastic stuff they eat in America.
I mean, anyone who's ever eaten American cheese can attest to the fact that it might be American, it ain't cheese.
Right.
But, you know...
I love the fact that obviously this show was at some point always going to be taken off the rails by cheese.
Of course. But, you know, actually, the people that they're dealing with are extremely experienced politicians, diplomats, people, economists, who know what they're doing, have, of course, their own interests and the interests of their particular bloc, country, whatever, at heart, and are not simply going to roll over and go, "Ooh, America, don't hurt us."
Yeah, I mean, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking of, and I'm so sorry to trigger you like this, I'm thinking of the Brexit negotiations. If you were someone in the orbit of the US president, you might think, oh, what happened during that? You know, the EU made life pretty damn difficult for the UK for quite a long time, as Tim Shipman's book attests to.
Yeah.
You know, the EU is very confident to pursue a fuck around and find out policy.
Absolutely, absolutely. As is Japan. And, you know, the fact that you've got Japan, South Korea and China, three countries who historically have not got on, coming together to go, let's have a joint policy with how we counter this.
Right. You know,
that is what is happening. Instead of America having war with 300 plus countries on each individual basis and therefore setting them against each other, 300 something countries are going, okay, well, America's unreliable. Who do we look to now? Where do we build our new alliances?
Meanwhile, China's going, thanks, guys.
Yeah. I mean, China has been hit by the highest level of the tariffs. But they're also, you know, a very strong economy. I mean, they've had some wobbles, but they're, you know, wobbles we dream of. And they don't have to do all of those froofy things that get in the way, like human rights and an open economy. Employee rights, all of that nonsense. You know, why would you have employee rights in a communist paradise?
Yeah.
And they don't, and they have also spent 20 years through things like the Belt and Road Initiative building up really strong relationships with countries around the world.
One of which is, of course, Russia, which you mentioned before.
Well, I don't think Russia's part of Belt and Road, but...
No, but yeah. They have an alliance.
But they have a strong diplomatic alliance, yeah.
And the other, of course, we've seen the row with Canada already, who were also not mucking around. You know, Trump destroyed his allies politically in Canada. Mark Carney, Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party had a huge boost once Trump started attacking Canada.
Yeah, looking properly competitive in the upcoming election.
Which was just
unbelievable.
It was over before it started. Hence why Trudeau, part of the reason why he resigned.
Yeah.
Let's come home. Let's go home. It's a really big test, I think, for Sir Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves. Obviously, that's not a politicised point. That's not a partisan point. This is a huge deal. Sir Keir Starmer has gone over and kissed the ring in the White House. He has tried to build that relationship, which, as you know better than I, was to the great discomfort of quite a lot of elements of the Labour Party. We discussed this on the show before, that, you know, Keir Starmer approached the real politique a bit, but that caused a lot of discomfort in other parts of the party. Now this trade war has happened. The UK has said that it will, you know, at the moment is exploring retaliatory action. It's, you know, we've not heard anything definitive at the time of recording. It's pretty clear Rachel Reeves preference is some kind of deal that takes the heat out of all this. It's a big political and economic test for the government, not of their own making. There's lots of other economic mess ups they've made. This is not one of them, but they do have to navigate their way out of it. And that's going to be a huge difficult test.
Yeah, I think, the idea at the autumn budget was that was the big tax raising budget. There wouldn't be another. They'd be tinkering. There's tinkering in every budget, but that was going to be the big one. And it might just be that there isn't, that because of the change in circumstances, there may have to be other tax rises.
Which brings with it its own political pain.
Which brings with it, of course, its own political pain, its own difficulties. It's not what a government wants to be doing. But if we are, A, not able to rely on NATO and our biggest NATO ally, and therefore having to pump money into defence, and B, have an economy hit by a global trade war that makes 2008 look like a sniffle.
Uh-oh.
Then, yeah, there will be economic pain. We shall see.
Again,
yeah.
Can we just catch a break? I'm so bored of unprecedented times, Emma.
I know.
Can we have a bit of unprecedented times?
It's the Chinese proverb, isn't it? May you live in interesting times.
It's a curse.
I don't want to.
But yeah, sorry, I was teasing. But you're right that we're at the moment we've done sort of okay. We're on the lowest band of tariffs. People seem to be seeing. I may be misinterpreted the data because I am no expert in these fields, but we seem to be sort of becoming a bit of a haven at the moment in terms of the stock market and things like that.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how that plays out medium to long term, of course.
I mean, it's interesting because post-Brexit, Frankfurt were really sort of bucking to take over from London mm-hmm. as the financial services centre.
Mm-hmm.
And while I see very little value in us Brexiting, one of the values is that we do have this separate market. And it has meant that our tariffs are 10% lower than our immediate neighbours, which does make us more attractive for investment.
Okay, we don't know how long that will last. One of the biggest problems of all this is Trump's woken up one morning and said one thing. By the time he's going to bed, he said another.
Well, exactly. And this is the biggest problem, I think, it's not the biggest problem. One of the problems that will have the longest lasting consequences is Trump's hokey-cokey approach to
markets can deal with lots of things. They can deal with volatility. They cannot deal with instability. That's the biggest red flag to any market and any trader.
Exactly. Businesses need to know what's going to be happening to the best of their ability. You don't know that Putin's going to invade Ukraine, right?
You don't know the world's going to get shut down by a virus.
You don't know the world's going to get shut down by a virus, but generally you kind of know this is what the global economy looks like and how it works. Now, if in 6 months' time, this set of tariffs is what the global economy looks like and how it works, businesses may settle into that. But this whole on again, off again, on again, off again, on again, off again, I think will make business far less likely to invest in making things in America because...
You can't trust America. I want to return to America and talk about Elon Musk, in a moment.
All the good stuff today, right?
Yeah. I just want to just finish off the bit about the UK reaction. Talking about Kemi Badenoch. Now, when I mentioned this, and you're making the face now, and I understand why, you were like, who cares what Kemi Badenoch thinks? And to a lesser or greater extent, you're basically right. But the reason this matters is because she tied herself quite a lot to the Trumpian cause, right? That's a fair assessment?
I think, to be fair to Kemi Badenoch, not a sentence
bloody hell
I employ often, I think she tried to plough, a furrow whereby she adopted quite a few Trumpian dog whistle approaches, but didn't tie herself as firmly as, say, Liz Truss has.
Yes.
Savannah Braverman. Trump himself. Now, Kemi Badenoch is fascinating at the moment because you are literally watching a woman being radicalised online in real time.
Yeah, we can talk about that in a second because there's something I want to point to. The reason I just point out in context of the trade war is because, as you say, she's tried to walk this line, and that means, do you go, yeah, Donald Trump is right or the American approach is right because this is the kind of politician I am as well. Look how clever, you know, make Britain great again. Or do you have to back the government's approach? And I think that is a difficult place for her and maybe more politicians more broadly on the right to navigate.
I was listening to Chris Philp try to thread that needle on the Today programme this morning. And he was like, I think the government's approach to Trump has been fine, but they've weakened our economy because of other things. And it's like, I wouldn't say that if I were a Tory, but if you like, love. I mean, what else is they going to say they have to
say? And I agree with some of the criticism of the economy, but that isn't the moment. That's not the conversation today.
No, exactly. And it just felt like, look over there, rather than, you know, we are a government in waiting and this is what our approach would be.
Bingo. And thank you so much for saying government in waiting. It's almost like we planned this because there's data here from Opinium who would make the best prime minister. This is data from 26th to 28th of March. We have Sir Keir Starmer on 26%, pretty painful given from, you know, that we've seen leaders come into office and crash more, but that ain't great. Probably is Kemi Badenoch is on half of that. She's on 13%. Yeah.
I know that there were all sorts of problems with Biden towards the end, but one of his best sayings was, don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative. So I think Chris Kistan will be perfectly happy with where he is on that.
Oh, yeah, you're not having kittens in Downing Street if you're seeing that. I mean, it might make you twitchy if it doesn't start to improve a little bit over the next couple of years, but you're right that the thing will make you really twitchy is if the Kemi Badenoch number starts going up. The other thing that I think is interesting and will be the biggest concern to Downing Street, I think, is that the none of these answer is at 45%. I assume a bunch of that is Nigel Farage, which in itself doesn't matter because he ain't becoming prime minister. Whatever the reform supporters like to say, they are not a government in waiting. They're not going to take over the Tory party. He's not becoming the prime minister. Hostage to fortune clip. I'm really terrified we're now going to have to replay this when in 5 years Nigel Farage is the prime minister. Don't know, is it the usual 16%? Fine. I don't know who else makes up some of that. None of these. Maybe Ed Davies. But maybe the point is the general dissatisfaction, actually.
Yeah, but I don't think that's particularly new.
Probably not.
I think, you know, none of these bastards is a fairly bog standard response
It's quite a high number though.
Any politician at any time.
It's quite a high number though, but yes.
It is, but it always is. I mean, don't know always wins every election.
Oh, sure.
According to polling. It's just that it ain't going to be on the ballot anytime soon.
Yeah. No, it's not a student union election.
Yeah,
with
the open nominations.
Yeah, with Ron. So, yeah, it's just worth waiting. I am interested in Kemi Badenoch's approach just because of what it will tell us about her strategically. It will have no consequence today, tomorrow or next week. But I'm interested in the strategic positioning and what that might tell about her going forward.
Yeah, I don't know. Kemi Badenoch was someone I thought would do a decent job.
We've said this before.
As leader of the opposition, if not as being prime minister in waiting. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure she's doing that. Did you hear about what she said to Jordan Peterson about the Lib Dems?
I mean, every word of that sentence is terrible.
Quite. She said, oh, the Lib Dems, you know, they're these They're these communities. They're so in their communities. They're the people who get the church roof fixed. And you're like, that's your message on the eve of local elections where there's going to be a lot of blue on yellow fights.
By the way, the Lib Dems would be cheering from those rooftops that they've had fixed about hearing that quote.
I expect to see that on every Lib Dem list, right? That they can get through a door.
Right. Oh, my days.
How does she sit there and think that is the way to talk about one of my principal opponents in what used to be safe Tory areas?
Bizarre. Totally bizarre. Talking of the bizarre, I just want to jump back stateside to Elon Musk, because we're hearing stories. Politico put out a story, and it's sort of been just drifting around for a while, that Elon Musk will be leaving the government, which is a ridiculous sentence in and of itself.
We're not even really in the government.
Precisely. Sort of in the coming weeks, basically. Yeah. He had a 130-day time limit on the role he could have. If you think the Tories cared about that, sorry, if you think Trump cared about that, forgive me, you got another thing coming. But anyway, the stories going round are, surprise, surprise, people in the American cabinet are getting upset about what he's doing. Everyone's getting a bit twitchy. Anyway, I suspect also the shareholders in his companies are getting a bit twitchy. And that might be the main motivator of all of it.
Yeah, look, Elon Musk could absolutely have gone in to doing some sort of government-y job and kept his head down.
Lol.
Done it in this way when he has no conflict of interest oversight.
Lol.
So continued to give all of the, the very dodgy, contracts that he's got with the government.
Well, the contracts themselves are not dodgy, but the conflict of interest is huge.
Yeah. And just done it all quietly and not risked becoming the face of cruel government cuts to programs people really, really care about. And not least, the demographic overlap of people who care about government programs with people who drive electric vehicles is pretty darn high, particularly in the States.
Also, never mind all of that. I don't disagree with anything you've just said. There's also the thing is, never mind cruelty, because let's be honest, some of the Trump supporters will like the sort of blowing up of things. That's what it is.
Yeah, but they don't buy Teslas.
Never. Fine. The problem is people don't like chaos. And Musk is now associated with chaos.
Even he's a more chaos than, agent, absolutely.
Even more than Donald Trump. And like, that might be a cool thing in Silicon Valley. It ain't good in Washington. And it's a mess. There was a great article I read in The Economist talking about the sort of way his guys are barging into departments. There was a row in one of the, with security guards getting in. It is chaotic and it's dangerous. And that is what Americans are never going to tolerate that. And that is associated directly with Musk. Even more than Trump, I think, genuinely.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And of course, the person who really isn't going to tolerate the amount of profile that Elon Musk has got is one Donald J. Trump.
Of course. And the thing that seems to...
It ain't Musk's show. It would be, you're fired.
Totally right. The one thing that also seems to have really shifted the dynamic in the recent days is this judge election, which again I think is a concept I found weird, in Wisconsin. Right. This is the problem, right? Elon Musk went out on a whim, put a huge amount of money into this particular race, and it blew up. He blew up the Republican candidate and the Democrat won. And that's also going to cause problems within the party.
Yeah. If that judge had won, mm-hmm. if Musk candidate had won, then all of those people in, you know, Republicans in Democrat leaning or swing states would have been like, okay, we need to bend the knee. We need to show fealty to Musk because he clearly can make these kinds of differences. But he put a record amount of money into this judgeship and he got clobbered.
Clobbered.
And it's worth looking as well at the two by-elections in Florida. Now, the Republicans held both those seats, but the margins were significantly smaller.
Yep.
I think it would be a mistake for the Democrats to take an enormous amount of sucker from this. The Democrats are still in a massive,
yeah,
massive
Cory
mess.
Booker can stand on his feet for as long as he likes.
I mean, Cory Booker's amazing. I thought that was wonderful.
I've liked it for quite a while.
I could talk about that for the whole...
We're running out of time. But yes, I think he's great.
Democrats do well in by-elections, whether they're for judges or for Senate seats or mm-hmm. House of Representatives seats, in part because they do well with high information voters. And we saw this in that in the post-election analysis that came out from I think it was Deep Blue. I can't remember what they're called.
Yeah. Deep Blue. Do you mean Bright Blue, the conservative group?
No. I think it's a thing called Deep Blue, which does post-election real kind of stratification analysis.
Right.
And they said that if non-voters had voted, Trump would have won by 5 more points because in general elections, low information voters more likely to turn out and more likely to vote Republican. Democrats do well with highly engaged people, which is really great for them in midterms and in by-elections. But actually, they are smaller in number than low information voters. And so they get clobbered in general elections. So they've got to win over more of those low information voters.
We'll turn to the UK next week. This has all been fascinating. It's a very dramatic couple of days in American politics, in global politics. So we apologise not one jot for keeping our eye on it and indulging our West Wing fantasies. Listen to that show, subscribers, by talking about it. Emma, where else can people keep up with you?
You can read my newsletter, which is called The Political Human, and it's on Substack.
And it's very good. And you can head to the pub and watch Emma's play soon as well.
You can, which will be on at the Lion and Unicorn Theatre. We'll put a link in the show notes. And the play is called Four Weigh-Ins in a Funeral. And I describe it as a play not about losing weight, but finding community.
Beautiful. I'm really looking forward to coming to see that. Head over to theaddition.net for my news, blogs, podcasts, all that kind of stuff. Of course, the best way to support this show and get all of the stuff we've just described is by going to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. Because there, it kind of works out just over a fiver a month. You get all of that stuff. And given each one of our newsletters is £5 a month, you're basically getting a steal. So that's patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast for our newsletters and extra House of Comments content.
It's a beautiful deal.
Right, I'm hanging up on you. Goodbye. See you next week.